You are now live.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay, well, good morning and welcome to Volution 2019 results presentation. A couple of things I'd like to do to kick off. So using this deck in front of you, page one, things that we'd like to talk about today. But first off, a change from some of the prior presentations. Welcome to Andy O'Brien. So Andy started as the CFO at the beginning of this financial year. Delighted that Andy's alongside me today, and so together we'll share this presentation. So it's slightly different format to what we've done previously. I mean, first off, should of course quote the prelim headline. You know, strong results for the year, revenue growth 14.6%, earnings per share growth of 10.3%, our fifth year since listing in 2014. What I would like to do today is just talk a little bit about what we're calling our refreshed strategy. I'll talk about the results in headline, but hand over to Andy to go through that in more detail. As is sort of pretty standard, I'll talk about the operating areas and how we've done in the prior year. And of course, I know already I've caught up with some of you outside the room. We'll talk about sort of the outlook statement and how we're seeing sort of current trading and how we view the year ahead. And I'd like to take you to page four in the deck here. And so just a reminder, really, our investment case, why invest in Volution? Market leadership. I mean, we are now 15 market-leading brands operating locally in 10 countries. And we believe we've got a track record for growth, 14% five-year revenue, CAGR growth. Diversification, I guess it's hugely topical at the moment with all of the wider UK backdrop, but 51.6% of our revenue is not derived from the UK market. That's a significant change from where we were when we listed in 2014. And a strong, consistent development in our financial performance. 10% adjusted operating profit five-year CAGR and 10% operating cash flow five-year CAGR. And of course, what that says is that the cash follows the earnings very reliably. And what's important for us is innovation. We believe we're a huge innovator in the space. We bring a lot of new product innovation to the market each year, and that helps underpin our organic growth and indeed some of the synergies and the improvements that we make with acquisitions. And on the right-hand side of this slide, we shouldn't forget the structural drivers in our space. Growing focus on indoor air quality, that trend is only going one way. It's only going to further underpin our space. And also the regulatory tailwinds. So there's an awful lot of publicity at the moment around carbon emissions and carbon reduction, and what we do is help reduce carbon emissions in buildings. So on the new build space, in pretty much every market that we operate in, these regulatory tailwinds, in actual fact, I had a call with the media early on today, and they said it looks like you've got a 30-year tailwind, and actually when you think about it, towards net carbon zero emissions, why not? So we're really pleased about the sort of structural growth in our market, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. As I said, refreshed strategy, not a major change. We believe that our strategy is clear and precise and not necessarily easy to execute, but we don't want to make huge changes to it. But I think it's about emphasis. And so on the next few slides, just to sort of remind you, we want to grow organically. We want to grow through adding on nice discrete acquisitions. And we also are working on improving the economic proposition of our Torin Cyfan OEM division. But what we've now decided, and I think it's an important sort of message to get across both externally and internally, is that the Torin piece becomes just normal organic growth. Last year, 4.8% organic growth. So our organic growth includes Torin Cyfan. On the right-hand side of page six, our M&A growth, we'll talk a little bit more in a couple of slides about the performance of acquisitions made to date. But we're introducing now what we call operational excellence, and that's not to suggest that we're only now focusing on operational excellence within the business, but it's got a, if you like, reinvigorated and refreshed focus. And I'll talk in more detail in a moment about what sort of things we believe we can do and what that results in. But organic growth on page seven, continue to grow through a focused sales strategy for each of our market sectors, focus on those opportunities arising from the favorable regulatory environment, continue to develop new products. We bring in an awful lot of new products to market every year, and our cross-selling opportunities become far greater as we increase our market coverage through acquisition. And so since we've listed, we've talked about a 3-5% organic growth range. We're at the lower end of the range, but nevertheless, it's been 3.2% organic growth over the 5 years since we listed, and was 3.5% last year. On the following page, talking about acquisition growth, again, I talk about wanting to grow the business 15% each year, 3-5% organic, 10-12% inorganic. And in actual fact, we're right in the middle of that range, 11.3% inorganic revenue growth in the 5 years since we listed, completely funded from our own cash generation. So the slide below, we did this in FY17, and I think it's a really good slide to have a look at in a little bit more detail. We've made 15 acquisitions over 7 years, and they're listed there, in the region, so Nordic, Central Europe, UK, and Australasia. And the important takeaways from this slide is how we integrate and improve businesses over time. So on the left-hand side, the weighted average of the acquisitions that we've made were 8.1 times the EBITDA at the point that we made the acquisition. The return on the invested capital in the first full year post making that acquisition was 13%. And before I talk about where we've ended up, what do we do and why are we acquiring? We're acquiring access to market. We now have a leading position in Australasia. And what do we think we can bring to those positions? In every case, we expand gross margins. We improve the cost of the products that are sold. Quite often, that's internalizing production of third-party supplied products and making them ourselves. But even where there are examples of companies that we acquire producing their own products, I don't think there's an example yet where we can't improve the gross margins of the products that they manufacture. We're bringing an awful lot of scale to this space, bringing a lot of innovation experience and a supply chain that I believe in what we do is one of the most comprehensive and one that we can sort of leverage into these areas. We have cross-selling. We're selling new products into these new geographies. That helps us grow the businesses more quickly. One of the frustrations for me is quite typically what happens is the fastest growth in any acquisition is the immediate period after acquiring it. The problem with that, of course, is it's not organic growth. So we get a huge growth in the first year that's not organic because we don't count it as organic until we've had 12 months worth of revenue. We saw that. We're seeing that right now in Australia where the growth is, effectively around double digit. You can see that from the numbers in the second half of last year. But, of course, it won't count towards our organic growth. But it's definitely fueled and assisted by what we bring. And so what does that end up? The multiple of all of those acquisitions that we've made are today at 5 times. However, in Australasia, Simex is the first year. But in the Nordics, first acquisition that I made back in 2012, fresh, we've done several since, the implied multiple of earnings at the end of the last financial year was less than half of what we paid. The return on the invested capital there is 29%. And even in the UK, where we've had one or two disappointments in respect of acquisitions made, we're still returning 14% on the invested capital. And whilst the multiple hasn't come down to the same rate as in other areas, it's still come down from 7.9 to 6.5 times. In Australasia, the return on invested capital is the same as the first year because it is the first year. It's 11%. But the multiple has already come down because we've improved the business from the point at which we acquired it. I think it's a really important slide. I know that you've asked for this in the past and we've been a little bit more circumspect, but we wanted to sort of consolidate Australasia. It was our largest acquisition in New Zealand, circa £40 million in March 2018. And at the end of this financial year, I fully expect us to continue this slide. And of course, we'll be adding in the Australian acquisition as we'll have 1 year of trading in FY20. So that's the second pillar in the strategy. So the first two are unchanged, as it were. And then operational excellence. And why operational excellence? I'm pleased to say that our Reading facility was complete in the second half of the last financial year. I know a number of you have been out to see us, and certainly we're opening that up now for site visits. What I would say about our Reading facility is it's one of its kind. There is not another facility in Europe producing as many residential domestic fans under one roof as we do there. We will leverage the opportunity that that affords, both in terms of improving margins, but also the capacity headroom. And so what we are targeting in the business now is a return to a 20% operating margin in the medium term. And there's a whole raft of things that we can do. It's not just the leverage from Reading and the optimization that's at play there, but it is all the things that we have been doing to date, but we expect to do better in the future. Placing additional emphasis on value engineering of products to achieve lower costs and improve ease of manufacture. Awful lot of work going on in the background at the moment, improving our domestic residential fan platform. That leads to two things, launching some new products, but also reducing the cost of the products that we currently produce. We've been rolling out ERP systems over the last few years. That had been a drag in one or two areas, but now we're in a position where we can reap the benefits of the investments that we've made. Improving manufacturing efficiency, we've got a whole raft of internal initiatives, and optimizing on the supply chain and sourcing benefits. So we believe, although we're talking very much as an ambition, as a target, as something that we're striving towards, the 20% operating margin target in the medium term is eminently sensible and achievable. So that was my sort of introduction, really, the change in the three strategic pillars, the introduction of operational excellence. I'll come back in a moment, talk about the year that we've just had, some of the revenue changes in the different markets, but I'd like to just hand over to Andy now to take you through the numbers for last year.
Thanks, Ronnie. Good morning, everybody, and thanks again for coming today. As Ronnie mentioned at the start, I'm now 2 months in post, so I think that still qualifies me to be the new boy in the room. In those 2 months, I've met a number of you here, so it's good to see you again, but those I'm meeting for the first time today, good to meet you and look forward to working with you in the near future. So look, the next couple of slides are really just going to pull together some of the themes and the numbers and the performance that Ronnie's already touched upon in the strategic pillar conversation. The layout for the first two that we're going to talk about, you know, we're showing both obviously a focus on the FY19 performance, but we're also showing it in a context of performance in the 5 years since IPO, because I think we think one of the important messages is, of course, how have we performed in the year that we're just talking about now, but also looking at the consistency of performance of the business, you know, over that duration. So, you know, I guess starting with the first one, revenue. So Ronnie's already talked about our two pillars of organic growth and acquisitions in organic growth, and I think, you know, that you heard the 3.5 on organic, so a slight pickup from the previous year, so that's gone up 1% compared to FY18. A good performance from our new acquisitions as well, so you put those two together, and that gave us that constant currency basis of 15.7% revenue growth for the year, and yeah, you look at the nice trend over the 5 years since listing. You know, clearly revenue is only good if it flows through to operating profits, and the good news is it largely does, although you know, we will acknowledge and hence the conversation around the third pillar, which I'll come on to, that, you know, we do have a focus on the slight margin restoration. So we recognise that whilst our margins at 18% or just under 18% are very good, obviously they have been tailing off ever so slightly. They've been tailing off for well-trailed and well-discussed reasons, partly the dilutive effect of acquisitions. So, you know, I guess back to Ronnie's earlier slide, when we buy an asset, we're buying something which is of typically a slightly lower quality, operating at a lower return. We then introduce measures and performance and improvements, and as that slide showed, a good track record of driving that performance up. So there's a naturally dilutive effect at the point of acquisition. If we're honest, there's also been a couple of slight sort of shooting ourselves in the foot around Reading and the issues we talked about earlier in the year around Torrens Cyclone. Those are both well and truly behind us. And I think the thing I would also draw attention to on the third bar, which is the profit margin, you can see the year-by-year margins, but what we've also then done is we've separated both for FY18 and FY19 the performance half by half. So if you follow that piece through, you know, what you see is that first half of FY18 financial year, we were running at 18.5%. As we got into Reading, that suffered a little bit. So H2 of FY18, we dropped down to 17.5%. First half of the year that's just closed, we held and slightly tickled that back up to 17.6. And I guess the encouragement for us, which supports the message that those issues are behind and supports the message that we're now getting onto the how do we drive margins forward, is the recovery from 17.6 to 18.1 in half two. So you put all those together, and that's the shape and the trajectory of the margin. And, I see Ronnie's already introduced that third pillar, and over time we're going to add more and more colour and complexity around the ideas and the initiatives that we're going to bring to bear in the operational excellence space. Flipping to slide 13 then, so adjusted EPS for the year of 16 pence versus 14.5, so a 10.3% growth in the year. And again, you see the five-year trajectory there, which is one that we're naturally very proud of. Cash flow-wise, and I'll come on to a little bit more detail around the cash flow for the year in a subsequent slide, but, we pride ourselves in being very cash generative. We're quite capex light. All of our acquisitions over the time have been self-funded. So one of the measures we look at quite closely is what we call cash conversion. So cash conversion for this year was 85%. Still very strong, slightly down on where we were in the previous year, which was 90%. And the principal reason for that is probably a slight increase in our stock levels, some of which is deliberate around Brexit and some planning we've done for that in predominantly Belgium and the UK. Some of it is areas that, again, under the operational excellence initiative, we're going to be focusing on once Brexit's behind us, how do we get inventory to the right place. And net debt for the year, so down slightly, so down 2.6 million. I'll come on to the detail in subsequent slides, but essentially, it's the operating cash generation minus the tax, minus the dividend, and then, of course, in the year, we spent about 11 million on the acquisition of Ventair, plus a small portion of contingent consideration for the Pamon acquisition that we did at the end of the previous year in Finland. So then if you jump to slide 14, so I promise I'm not going to go line for line down through the table here, but I guess previous couple of slides, obviously we've been focusing on predominantly our adjusted measures, so here you'll also see the reported measures, and actually if you look at the reported profit before tax, you see a pretty staggering increase there of 38% in year. Clearly a big piece of that, which again, I'll show in a subsequent slide, is the impact in FY18 of the exceptional costs around Reading, there was a little bit of that in the first half of this year. That's now behind us. So again, that exceptional cost number substantially reduced in FY19. Dividend per share, so that's gone up to 4.9, so a 10.4% increase, so ever so slightly above the rate of EPS growth. Just going down below the line there, finance costs slightly higher in the year, and that's because of the average debt level, because the acquisitions were made at the end of FY18. So our adjusted finance costs increased by just under £1 million to £2.2 million. In terms of tax, our adjusted effective tax rate for the year was 20.7% versus 19.6 in the year previous. It's essentially a function of our mix, and particularly the increased activity in Australasia. I guess going forward, we're guiding to a rate of around 20% in the medium term, so we've got the lower rate in the UK starting to kick in. We'll have a bit of benefit from in FY20, but more in FY21, offset by the mix with overseas profits as well. So that's a quick walk through the financial highlights there. Jump on the next slide, 15. I think I've already trailed the key points here, but this is our reconciliation and walk from adjusted to reported profits. And like I say, the main piece I draw people's attention to is the substantial reduction in exceptional operating costs from 6.4 in FY18 to 1.8 in FY19. And that's further broken down, lower down there, where you see the cost of essentially the Reading project, which was 5 prior year, 1.3 in this year. And essentially that 1.3 was spent in half one, so that project is now well and truly complete and behind us. If you jump to the next slide, just to look at the balance sheet. So I think at a summarised level on the balance sheet, the main item that I've already alluded to is the increase in inventory. So our inventories went up by just under £6 million in the year. Now, clearly with a 15% activity growth, it's not surprising inventory goes up, but it's gone up a little bit more than we'd have expected it to. And as I said earlier, part of it we would definitely say is deliberate planning that will unwind, hopefully. And part of it was is areas that we just need to apply a little bit more focus to around the operational excellence space. It's not shown on the slide here, but just when you sort of dive into the bigger detail that's available in the prelims, you will see that there is some sort of presentational changes that are a consequence of our adoption of IFRS 9 and more so IFRS 15. I guess just to briefly highlight the impacts those have had. So IFRS, essentially no change at all. IFRS 15, the main impact is a presentational one where the rebates that we pay to our customers, we previously described those as trade payables, and we've now had to describe them as refund liability. So you'll see that when you go into more detail in the balance sheet. IFRS 16 for us, we'll be applying in the new financial year just started. We're trying to evaluate what the impact is likely to be. Again, it's essentially a balance sheet one, so we think it's of the range of sort of 18 to 21, 22 million on both sides of the balance sheet in terms of the right of use asset and the matching liability. From an underlying earnings perspective, the impact is not going to be big. We think it's going to be, you know, of the order of £300,000, give or take a little bit. So that's the balance sheet. Then if you just jump to slide 17 in terms of cash flow. So like I said, you know, I think we do pride ourselves on the strongly cash generative nature of the business. The 85% cash conversion I mentioned for FY19, so that translates to the adjusted operating cash flow of £37 million. We've then used that, deployed some of that in the year, income tax payments of £9 million, dividends, as I mentioned, you know, we've a slight increase in our dividend relative to EPS, so that's just over £9 million as well. And then you see the £11 million at the bottom of the page spend on acquisitions, predominantly Ventair, with a small amount of contingent consideration for PAMA. So with that,
excellent.
Back to Ryan.
Thank you very much. Page 19. So just a reminder, really, the 15.7% revenue growth, 3.5% organic growth, and over the coming pages, I'll talk in a little bit more detail, but one of the things that we said that we would do, we'd aim to double the size of the business every 5 years, and we sort of achieved that at the revenue line, and of course with a little bit of operating margin dilution, we haven't quite doubled the earnings, as it were. So that's bringing sharply back into focus the operational excellence and the value that will bring. But the next few pages are the regional area. So UK, page 20, and good organic growth in the UK, 3.3%. We were pleased with that. The export, I'll start in reverse, the export declined, but we knew it would decline. We didn't fully take the credit for the exceptional growth in the year before because we talked about a one-off spares order that we knew wouldn't repeat in the following year. So we were very cautious around export and not getting carried away. But nevertheless, that decline was materially the non-repeating export order to Japan, spares order. But if you look at the rest of it, so the 3.3% organic growth is in spite of the fact that our export declined, and of course the export wasn't really the UK market, so the underlying growth in the UK is of course greater than the 3.3%. UK residential systems, and we've introduced the word systems there, these are system ventilation equipment going into only new applications. This doesn't include any refurbishment products that can still find their way into the new build market. The revenue is much smaller, and we actually have that under RMI. But organic growth of 8.6% in the year was slightly slower. It was slower in the second half of the year than the first half, but the order intake throughout the year has still been hugely positive. And back to what I said earlier, regulations are underpinning this space. Heat recovery is becoming much more mainstay in new build dwellings, and it will only continue to grow in the months and years ahead. A detail now, but Part F and Part L have gone out for consultation in the UK, and the direction of travel is to be much more punitive, particularly around indoor air quality. And of course, I think you know this, that outdoor air quality is getting an awful lot of press time at the moment. It was on the front page of some of the national newspapers a few weeks back. And of course, your indoor air quality can be better than your outdoor air quality if you have a heat recovery system that filters the air. So the drivers in this space are not just about carbon reduction, but they're also about air quality. I'm getting into quite a bit of detail here, but I don't want to concern you, but if you've got poor ventilation in areas such as maybe bedrooms, which typically under the regulations aren't ventilated, then you've got all sorts of issues around VOCs. And there's been, if you have a look, it's on the government website, there's been quite a good study recently, 100 new build dwellings that were surveyed between, I think, 2015, 2017. But because regulations don't prescribe ventilation in the bedrooms, and if the dwelling isn't ventilated properly, you get a build-up of VOCs in the areas that aren't ventilated. Now, that means for us, we solve these problems, and these problems, I think, are only starting to become well-known now, and of course, it's because dwellings are much more airtight. We sealed up the dwellings 10, 15 years ago. Insulation companies did extremely well off the back of the insulation drive, but the next element of drive and growth is in ventilating these buildings more adequately. So it's not just our new build systems in the UK, but it's anywhere where you're building new dwellings and this awareness around indoor air quality. So new build, a little bit about the outlook. I think the new build sector in the UK is okay. We're still reasonably positive about the year ahead. And we're continuing to bring new products to market in this space. Our market share is significant. And our outlook, I would say, remains broadly similar to the year that we've just had. I think the one area that is weaker is UK commercial. We've alluded to that in the prelim statement. There's quite a bit of detail there about UK commercial. And UK commercial is really, for us, what I would say, UK London new build commercial, I think, is probably the right answer. Our RMI in commercial is okay. Our schools and education commercial is also okay. So it's about 40% of our revenue that's focused on London commercial new build, which is a little bit less certain, but that was the case in the second half of the last year. So there's no great surprise to us now, and unlike some others that maybe have announced more recently, we don't see, from our perspective, the markets materially different in their behaviour now to how we performed last year. And in actual fact, on UK residential RMI, we're really positive. We don't think the market's great in terms of RMI activity, but we know that the service drag that we had at the beginning of last year has gone. We delivered 3.1% organic growth. Curiously, our public RMI growth was greater than our private last year. And that's a lot of effort that's gone in over the last 3 or 4 years, new product introductions, refocusing of the sales teams across two brands, both Ventaxia and Airtech in the UK. And we're positive about public RMI going forwards. We think that it should grow for us over time, and we could spend a lot of time talking about the state of public housing dwellings in the UK and indoor air quality and mould and condensation problems. And again, that's what we fix. So public RMI really good, and private RMI, dare I say, I think UK consumer is actually starting to understand now that ventilation doesn't have to be ugly and noisy, and it can actually be quiet, energy efficient. There is a small premium to pay, but actually relative to the value that it brings, it's not a big premium. And so our upsell in private RMI is gaining a lot of traction. We launched this product here, the Pure Air Fan. It's actually a product that we launched earlier in the Nordics. It's got odor sensing as well. So it's got odor sensing as well as humidity sensing. It's a high-end offer, and we had very strong sales when we launched it in July. It's listed in a whole raft of new places. And so we're really positive about the upselling that we bring to RMI. It doesn't necessarily have to be unit volume growth. We can't dictate how many refurbishments take place in the UK, but we can help influence the value that we get for each one of those that take place. So at a time when people are probably quite well, quite pessimistic about RMI, we're actually reasonably positive, and it comes back to what we're doing. Last bullet on the slide was export, and I've already talked about that. So a good year for the UK in spite of all of the well-discussed and well-known challenges. In the Nordics, again, I think the Nordics as a market, particularly Sweden, I need to be clear here that it is Sweden, I think has been soft for about 18 months. So we're predicting that the next 6 to 12 months will be broadly similar. We don't see any huge recovery in Sweden around new build. It is really around new build, Stockholm apartment, new builds and so forth. We're predominantly RMI rather than new build. We have got some really good new initiatives on the product side, but we think the Nordics will continue to be difficult in Sweden. But indeed, we've got a much wider, more attractive portfolio. The acquisition in Finland, Oipamon, went really well last year, and you've seen that we had to pay out an additional £600,000 of contingent consideration for achieving some of the targets for growth that we've set. So we're really excited about our position in Finland, our heat recovery offer, and how we can extend that across the different markets that we access. So in actual fact, those two pages are probably the areas that were more difficult for us last year, or the market backdrop was more difficult. As we go into Central Europe, we grew 9.3% organic growth in Central Europe. I don't think Central Europe's growing at 9.3%, but we are, and it takes time. So a lot of detail here, but in Belgium and Netherlands, particularly in Belgium, we completely refocused the company that we acquired to go into the distribution market with our strong brands and to have that wider offer. And so what it means is when we launch new products into the space, we get that leverage very quickly. We were able to launch a product into a whole raft of different distribution points. And that's what we're doing. So we're launching this wider, what we consider compelling product portfolio in Belgium and getting really good traction, in the Netherlands and getting really good traction. And in Germany, we're probably the number two player in this decentralized heat recovery space, which curiously in Germany has overtaken central systems in terms of the preferred technology. We brought a new product range to market in the summer of 2018. It did really well in the second half of last year. And so our outlook in Central Europe for this year is probably broadly similar to what we saw last year. And that will absolutely be share gains, as you would expect, because we're not predicting that Belgium, Netherlands and Germany's economies will grow 9% this year. Australasia, 8.8% organic growth. Need to be a little bit careful about organic growth. It only kicked in from March because, of course, the anniversary of the Simex acquisition was in March 19. So it's 8.8% organic growth in the period after March. But in New Zealand, it was difficult. We acquired in New Zealand. We knew that when we were acquiring the business, we had a change of government towards a socialist government. We knew that the local market conditions were a little bit more difficult. And, of course, at that point in time, if we were only buying the business for the 1 or 2 year period, we might have stopped and decided not to do it. And I knew that we'd be explaining in the first 12 months more difficult market conditions in New Zealand. However, we've been there now for 18, 19.